Cheers, Emma. My name is Narad. I'm an addict. I normally like to start share with a reading from the book, but I saw this quote the other day and I really liked it. It kind of summed it up for me. It's a quote by a lady called Margaret Mead. And she says, "Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed citizens can change the world. Indeed, it's the only thing that ever has." And that really resonates for me because, you see, there was a small group of people within this fellowship that changed my world or helped me change my world. This small group did what the doctors I'd seen couldn't do. They did for me what a numerous amount of therapists couldn't do for me, treatment centers couldn't do for me, dry houses couldn't do for me, my mum couldn't do for me, my girlfriends couldn't do for me, my kids couldn't even do it for me. You know, they had managed to change my world. And as a result of changing my world, it's a ripple effect, you see, because the type of person that I'm trying to be today and the way that I conduct myself today has an effect on those around me, my friends, my family, my children, my work colleagues, Joe Bloggs walking down the street. So, you know, in my own little way, in my own small little way, that is a change in the world for the better. You know, there's a beautiful line in the book, in step 10, about, you know, when we're looking at inventory, and the last question is, what did we pack into the stream of life? You see, if you're anything like me, you know, I imagine my life as this stream that crosses the earth, and the kind of stuff that I used to put in that stream was dishonesty, fear, resentment, anger, aggression, thieving, lying, deceitful behavior. And as you can imagine, that's a stream that looks or sounds quite polluted, you know. And what I'm trying to pack into the stream of life today, it's not the activities, it's not the fact, oh, I'll go to the gym or, you know, I've got a job. What I'm trying to pack into the stream of life today is love, compassion, understanding, honesty, discipline, integrity, all those beautiful things that I seem to have trouble trying to do before I came into recovery. Now, growing up, I see everything I'll say is sort of retrospective. I couldn't see these things at the time. I've only been able to see these things since I started this recovery journey. You know, we get that beautiful ability to be able to look at ourselves honestly for the first time instead of being in denial about who we really are and what we really like. You know, and there's a quote by Steve Jobs who says, "You can only connect the dots backwards." So I can see more clearly today why I was the way I was. And as a child, what I can tell you is, you know, if you'd had asked me before, I had a relatively happy childhood. There was no external trauma as such. You know, I did have dark skin. I had a strange name. I was brought up in the 80s in a town that was very, we had very diverse community, but I may have experienced name calling because of my colour and stuff like that. I think it's the same for anyone. It could have been the guy that had ginger hair or the kid that was overweight or the kid that wore the glasses with the plaster in the middle to keep them together. You know, we were all called names and picked on for certain differences at school. I think that one of the things when you're a child, or certainly for me, was that I wanted to fit in, you know, and I always felt like I never quite fitted in. I didn't know what that feeling was. You know, I could talk and joke with the other kids and stuff, but I never really felt, the word I'm really looking for is comfortable. I never really felt comfortable. And, you know, I could look at this through going through this book and see that a lot of that was around my self-consciousness. I was very self-conscious, very self-obsessed, would always be comparing myself to other people, other guys and what girls thought of me. I wanted to know what other people thought of me. You know, these thoughts and feelings would cripple me in some ways emotionally. So yeah, this was me going into my teens. A very self-conscious kid, bit of a late one with the girls, you know. I never started dating until I was about 17. You know, I took drugs for two reasons, rational reasons, you know, opportunity and curiosity. my friends were doing drugs. There was the opportunity. And they looked like they were having a pretty good time. So there was the curiosity. I thought, you know, I'll have a go at this. And the book describes, you know, we seem to enjoy, it's the effects, you know, and there are a number of different ways people say that, you know, they like the way it changed the way they felt, you know, it got me high. You know, what, I'll tell you what it did for me, and I can only see this today, is it released me from that self-conscious, self-obsessed person. It released me from that. Obviously, the byproducts was always high. So I enjoyed that too. But suddenly, I'd gone from feeling very uncomfortable to feeling comfortable. And also had the illusion of being present. You know, and then all that feeling for me is the feeling, you know, I used to think it was the high I was chasing. It was the release from me that I was really chasing. You know, because nothing else had ever done that for me like that did. And I think this is why it took so long, living in denial for so many years, because this thing that cocaine gave me, I hadn't found anything else on the planet that could do that. You know, look, it started sort of 16, 17, taking drugs. There was experimentation with lots of different drugs. I eventually landed on cocaine, you know, and look, my using was like this. It started with a few grams. I'll leave one here and I'll take one out, you know. And then it was like, well, no, actually, I'm just going to buy gear, not worried about going out. Why don't you guys come around here and we'll have a session around my house? Then it turned to, you know what, I'm not going anywhere, not doing anything unless I've got gear. Then it came to, oh, well, you know what? Actually, I don't even need my mates to come around. I'll just do the gear on my own. And then it came to, do you know what? I probably shouldn't be doing this tonight. I've got work tomorrow. And then it came to, oh my God, there's no reason I should be doing this. I've got so much to do. I'm so behind on so many things. And then it came to, I can't stop doing this. I can't stop doing this. And so the perceived glamorous life of using cocaine just disintegrated over a few years to, look, from having a very nice external life, house, partner, cars, great career, money, to living in a clapped out car, in a car park, in a tracksuit that I hadn't taken off in about 3 months, unshaven, disheveled, underweight, just looking like a man ready to die. So, you know, I came in and one of the first things my sponsor said to me was, Narad, if we don't change, we stay the same. And I just knew what he meant in that moment. I could for the first time see that nothing was ever going to change if I continued on this path. It was going to get worse, you know. But by this point, I'd already been knocking around recovery for a few years and not getting it, you know, or achieving a little bit of clean time here and there and then relapsing. And, you know, it was a powerful statement to me. It was, I honestly believe people had said amazing things to me in the three or four years before I actually got it, but I wasn't in a position to listen, you know. And people say, oh, you haven't lost enough, or it didn't really matter what I'd lost on the outside. It was when it came on the inside. You know, the book talks about this innermost self. I didn't even need to tell anyone I was done. I just knew I was done. I could not possibly see a life with or without cocaine. And I'm a firm believer that's why I heard what I heard is, when the student is ready, the teacher will appear. And at that moment, I was ready and a teacher appeared. You know, and he said to me, you can have an experience by going through these steps. And, you know, if you do it honestly and fearlessly and thoroughly, you'll have an experience that will change the way you think. And you'll see the world and the people in it and yourself in a different light. And you'll be connected to something that's greater than you. And the byproduct of that is that you will never have to use again. The obsession to use will be removed. And I just went for it. You know, I went through this process and exactly that happened. And I want to tell you that the first time I went through the steps was beautiful. It was beautiful. But initially going through it, it was extremely, it was freeing. It was very freeing, very relieving, but also very damning. You know, there's a thing, isn't there, about truth, which says, the truth will set you free, but at first it will piss you off. You know, there was a lot of that going on for me. I didn't like what had been presented to me in these steps about myself. I couldn't believe some of this stuff, but it had to be true. I wrote it. All my sponsor did was point it out. So that was it. You know, I came in and the obsession was removed. And then at the time I was living in a dry house. I had nothing more to do than to do what was suggested in this book. You know, go to meetings, get a home group, get some commitment at a home group. The service side, you know, try to work and help other addicts, you know, in recovery. And then there was the personal recovery, you know, my own journey, as it were. And, you know, I took it very, very seriously. In fact, to be fair, you know, for the first 6 months of my recovery, I was what you would call one of the Cocaine Anonymous militia. You know, I was one of the guys that wanted to run around and tell everyone else, you're all selfish, self-centered. You need to do the steps and go and help somebody. And, you know, this got me so far. It got me a few months down the road. And what I found at sort of 9 months of doing this, my external life has started to piece itself together. You know, by doing the right things, you know, I started to work again. I've got another car. I've got a place to live. I've got myself into a relationship. And I felt awful. Something was not right inside me. And it was that feeling I knew from before I even started taking drugs. It was that feeling of being uncomfortable. And because I'd had a couple of journeys in recovery before, I knew I couldn't deny these feelings of uncomfortability. You know, look, we've heard the word spiritual malady brought up today. And, you know, my concepts or my ideas around a spiritual malady is, yeah, there's spiritual malady, there's unmanageability, there's the book uses loads of terms. It says the alcoholic that leads the double life. The alcoholic wants to enjoy a certain reputation. He, you know, runs through the lives of others like a tornado. You know, this is me. This is me clean and sober. I can still be that person. And it was the realization that although I was recovered in the sense that the obsession had left me, there was a lot of growing up to do. Emotionally, I was still very immature. I was still quick to reaction. No matter how many times I read pause in the morning, I could still be quick to react. You know, so it was a beautiful, another revelationary part of my recovery at 9 months to realize that I thought I had this locked off. And actually, probably what was the nearest thing was is I was probably very near to a relapse because I realized in that moment that I actually don't know nothing. I know absolutely nothing. I'm 9 months clean. I'm telling everyone else what I think they need to do to stay clean and sober. And I feel awful and I'm too scared to tell anyone. And so I knew. I prayed and I sat on this and I thought, I've got to go and do something. And so I changed sponsors. I wanted a new experience. And so at 10 months clean, I found a new sponsor. And I went around to loads and loads of different meetings. And I thought, you know, God, just help me. Find me a meeting. And funny enough, I was going to go down to London. I thought, I've got to go down to London because I've been in the West Midlands and maybe I'll hear something down there. And it turned out I didn't have the time. And I just ended up going to a meeting over near Milton Keynes somewhere. I thought, oh, I don't even want to go to this meeting. It's a traditions meeting. And I went in and I was just about to share and this guy piped up in front of me and he started sharing. And I just sat back and it was like the voice came and said, this is it. This is what I've got for you. You know, and I knew I had to ask this guy. And it was the best thing that I ever did. You know, I'm a believer that, you know, if you seek, you shall find. I went through this process with this guy to understand for me a deeper sense of the nature of alcoholism and what I was really up against, clean and sober. You see, we went through this work and it wasn't even drugs were hardly mentioned. And so I could see how me, Narad's selfish and self-centered ways were manifesting in recovery. and this was a very, very powerful experience for me. It was dark. It was a dark experience, and it was a painful experience. And I do believe that through that pain, I grew. I grew emotionally. I was able to cope with the trials and tribulations of that time, and they would take me through. To this point now, which is, you know, nearly 2.5 years clean and sober. And, you know, I believe I'm still in the infancy of my recovery. And in that way that it keeps me humble. And if I'm humble, I'm still learning. I just want to keep learning. And I very much, the reason I share some of this stuff is that it's really important. I think sometimes people in recovery that are a few months in can be neglected, that they've been given a solution. And sometimes, you know, I'm going to read this line from the book. That it says in the book here, it says, whether such a person can quit upon a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which he has already lost the power to choose whether he will drink or use or not. You know, so this is expanded for me. This is whether such a person can live on a non-spiritual basis depends upon the extent to which he has already lost the power to choose or not. So the reason I say that is because I can see clearly today that there is really no other way for me to live happily and comfortably in this life, in this world, with all you lot, without this program. You know, it has truly given me a way to live that has made me feel comfortable and manageable and with little glimpses of serenity and peace. And, you know, that's why I continue this journey. And I hear a lot of times in the rooms, people say things like, I have to do this stuff. You know, for me, it's not half. I want to do it. I love the effects of recovery. I love the effects that this way of life gives me. And for that reason, I am truly blessed and truly grateful for such a wonderful fellowship for saving my life. So I'll leave it there. Thank you.